Volt, Leaf, Tesla, Prius, and more. This week on Reality Check, we have Jacob Knudsen from Coos Curry Electric Co-op and Tom and Linda Bozak. They're all passionate electric vehicle owners to talk about their electric cars and the state of the art. And also fill us in a little bit about how Coos Curry is responding to the challenge of electric cars and related subjects. So hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
And I'd like to just start out talking on a personal level about the electric car and how that's been for you. Linda, would you like to tell us about what your experience is a little bit?
Well, we first got a Volt with a V, which runs both on electricity and gas.
Uh-huh.
And it's been great because we haven't taken a lot of long trips with it, but so we haven't had the problem of finding charging stations. We charge it right in our garage, and it's wonderful because we get very, very seldom have to buy gas at the gas station.
Uh-huh.
And it just runs well, and we've been very happy with it. So I like the quietness of it, too. It's very quiet, mm-hmm. which in some ways might be a problem because if somebody doesn't hear you coming, that could be a problem. But I haven't seen that to be a problem at this point. So you just have to be aware of that you're not making a lot of noise where you're going. The quietness is nice, and it's nice when you're driving. That it's quiet, and we've around town it's just been really perfect.
Yeah,
because of plugging it in when we get home, and there's just it's
and
very
it's ready
very
to go.
Simple and it's ready to go. And so and we haven't had a huge uptick in our electric bills, mm-hmm. which has made us happy. It hasn't been of course, it's hard to tell because then the cold weather sets in and you don't know if it's cold weather making your electric bill go up or if it's your car. But it seems like it's not the cars that's really causing any increases in electric bills. So we've been happy with it. And then after we had the Volt for a while, and then we got a Spark, mm-hmm. which is totally electric.
Mm-hmm.
No gasoline involved. You can't put gas in it. And it has a little larger range, but still not. What? How many miles? About 80.
The EPA rating is the government rating is 82 miles.
So, mm-hmm. so you can't go too far without charging it, but
that's enough to take you around town a few times.
Yes, it is, and it's enough to get you up to Gold Beach and back.
Mm-hmm.
So, it really has served us very well.
Yeah,
and so it's been good too. It's a smaller car. But uh-huh. that's fine.
And the Volt is made by Chevy?
Both of them are.
Both
the
of
Volt
them are.
And
okay,
the
so they're
Spark.
Locally serviced, which is handy.
Yes, yeah. So and we bought them locally,
mm-hmm.
which was nice.
Yeah.
So, and also just to distinguish the difference, there's the Volt with a V,
mm-hmm.
and there's a Bolt with a B, like in boy.
Yeah.
And so the Bolt is totally electric. Is that right? Yes,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
And the Volt is the one that has both electricity and gas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, you're talking about the quietness, and I know I had a Prius. I don't have it anymore, unfortunately, because it was a great car. But I had one time I was coming into the drive-thru at the Chase Bank here at Fifth Street, and there's some bushes just as you enter that lane there, just kind of outside of the ATM kiosk. And I guess the kids couldn't hear me coming, and they jumped right out in front of me.
Oh, dear.
It was really scary.
That
I mean,
is.
It really is a concern that your car just doesn't sound like a car. It's just so quiet. What about you, Tom? Will you have anything to add to Linda's?
Yeah, a bit.
Go ahead.
Concerning the Volt, V-O-L-T, it does have a gasoline engine, but most people in their daily driving, never use the gasoline engine, never burn any gasoline, because it has about a 50-mile range on battery.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're driving around town, shopping, that sort of thing, you're never going to use any gas. We've, you know, gone all the way to Port Orford on battery. But
right.
when, you know, the battery's depleted down to a certain level, the gasoline engine will start. and maintain the battery a certain charge. And, you know, you can drive as far as you want to until you run out of gasoline. But so it's a combination. It's kind of a transitional technology between pure electric and what we have now in standard gasoline cars. Would mention both for the Spark and the Volt, one of the things that I like about it is the driving experience. The performance is amazingly good. You know, there's sort of a belief out there that electric cars are dogs, you know, and they can't get out of their own way. And some are, you know, but many of them now are of extremely impressive performance. And there are several reasons for that. And one of the primary ones is that, you know, an electric motor can produce maximum torque at 0 RPM. So if you're talking about acceleration, the acceleration is impressive, especially between 0 and 30 or 40 miles an hour. I mean, it's really fast.
And we don't get to go any faster than that in town anyhow.
Well, that, but even at highway speed, you still have a lot of performance to draw from there. For example, the Spark EV, the electric Spark, there's a gasoline version too. But the electric version has a torque of maximum torque of 327 pound-feet, which compares to the gasoline version, which has a maximum torque of 90 pound-feet.
Oh my goodness.
So the difference in performance is big.
It is huge.
It is huge. So the driving experience can be very pleasant in those cars. When you need to move, they'll move. Also, because electric cars, you know, a lot of their weight's in the battery, batteries are generally low in the car and, you know, under the floor. So that makes a low CG, which is very beneficial to handling. So in that respect, most of them are very nice to drive.
So you were saying that you didn't use gas much. How often do you fill gas?
Last time we put in gas was December. And that was the only time we put in gas in 2018.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
We put in 4.8 gallons.
Because Linda was saying you can't really separate out that part from your gas, from your electric bill. So I guess you don't know exactly how much the electricity is costing, but no gas? That's amazing.
Yeah, we can calculate the use of electricity, but when we started charging cars, we didn't really notice the difference in our electric bill. It was kind of down in the noise, you know, with the seasonal variations and all that.
Cool. Well, Jacob, how about you? You own electric cars yourself, right, or a electric car. Tell us about your experience.
Well, at Coos Curry Electric, our members were asking us, do electric cars really work? And we didn't know the answer to that. So about a year ago, we purchased a Chevy Volt, the plug-in hybrid, and a Chevy Bolt, which is the pure battery electric vehicle.
So the V and the B.
We have both of them, yep. And we've spent a year seeing how they work and getting to know them, and we've had an extremely pleasant experience. We've talked a little bit about the Volt with the V already, so I'll just kind of dive into what the pure electric vehicle has been like. And it is just a hoot to drive. The torque is mind-blowing, actually. It's from a stoplight, it'll keep up with a Camaro for the across the intersection. In fact, we've had some employees get their fingers wagged at while driving it just because it's so fun to drive with gusto. It appears to be an exceptionally compact car from the outside, but because there's no gasoline engine, there's no transmission, there's no hump in the floor for the exhausts and driveline, it's large. I'm 6'3", and I can fit a 6-foot person behind me when I'm driving comfortably. So while it appears small from the outside, it's quite large inside. You can easily fit 4 full-size adults very comfortably. And it, the cost of travel in it is remarkably low. We've been We have been tracking the cost of driving mm-hmm. it. We use it as a pool car, so it makes the trip between our Brookings office and our Coquille office quite regularly. And we are getting about 4 miles per kilowatt hour average.
What's that translate into?
So it's hard to translate that exactly into miles per gallon, but to put it in terms that relate, most people can relate to, if you're charging that at a residential, at your home on our residential mm-hmm. rate, then to drive that 100 miles would cost you $2.35.
That sounds pretty good. Because I guess if you're talking about your typical gas car, that's 30 miles to a gallon. So that's about 3 gallons of gas, which is running what nowadays? 3 and something?
If you just
I'm asking the wrong people here,
<You're>
right?
Really. If you just call it $3 per gallon for simple math,
yeah.
Then
so
$9 you're still at $9 or $10, which I think is a little low, but yeah, it's extraordinarily inexpensive to drive.
That's
and then the
huge.
Ongoing maintenance costs are also very low. There's no oil changes.
Yeah.
There's really very little routine maintenance, just checkups to make sure all the systems are running correctly.
So really there's nothing like, well, I suppose you still need brakes and tires, but no oil changes, no, none of that. And there's a bunch of other parts you just mentioned that are not there.
Correct. And regarding brakes, one of the exciting things about driving an electric vehicle is the way that it uses the kinetic energy of the moving vehicle to create electricity when you're slowing down. It's called regeneration.
It recycles that energy, doesn't it?
And there's several regeneration modes that you can put it in. And when you put it in the very aggressive regeneration mode, you don't have to use your brakes except in emergency braking. It will, just using the electric motor to create electricity, slow the vehicle down to a complete stop within a relatively short time. So you can drive the vehicle.
Okay, I'm confused. Are we sort of talking about downshifting? How, when you don't use your brakes, how does that work?
So an electric vehicle doesn't have a transmission. There's only mm-hmm. one gear.
Right.
So you don't have to downshift.
Okay.
But when you can, an electric motor can act as a motor that drives the wheels, or the wheels can drive the motor, and then it acts as a generator to create energy that gets stored in the battery.
That's the recycling part.
So it's called regeneration, yep.
Yeah.
So when you're coasting, it's actually generating electricity that gets stored in the battery for your use when you need to accelerate later. How much energy it regenerates is going to act as a brake. The more energy it's asking for, the more braking force it puts on the wheels. So when you have it in, it's called maximum regeneration mode, you let your foot off the accelerator and it feels almost like you're applying the brakes.
So it's not like a gas engine where it's going to keep turning over as you go. When you let off the accelerator, then it just basically is going to start sucking that energy back into the system.
Correct.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting.
So I can drive from Brookings to Coquille and never actually apply the brake pedal.
Really?
So we're expecting the brakes to last as long as we have the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say my brain just melted down. I have to absorb this idea. I'm never using the brakes. So you just take your foot off the accelerator. You're going to brake in the same amount of space as if you have it on this maximum regeneration cycle?
It slows down at about the same rate as if you are pushing the brake like you're arriving at a stoplight. It's not, you'd use the brake for panic braking. If there's a deer mm-hmm. jumps out in front of you and you need to stop aggressively, then you would use the brake. But for negotiating corners and coming up to stoplights, you do not need to.
That's just so you don't have to like adjust to stopping sooner or anything. It's just automatic.
You have to change your mindset because it's habit to lift off the accelerator and put your foot on the brake when you're slowing down. And instead of that, you need to learn to just modulate the accelerator mm-hmm. to control how fast you're slowing down. So there's a little bit of a learning curve, but after a few miles, it just becomes habit.
Wow. Well, that's pretty impressive. So you don't own one yourself personally. It's the fleet that you have for Kuzma.
I don't own one personally yet.
But I expect you have a lot of experience with it anyhow.
I've put about 10,000 miles on the two electric vehicles personally.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So we have experience with Volts and Bolts, and I had the Prius and Spark. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a bunch of other electric cars out there. Do you all know much about them? We got any
I know less about them, but some.
Yeah.
The big name in electric cars, of course, is Tesla.
Uh-huh.
And there are quite a few in town now.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the Tesla Model 3 is a hot seller. It's the so-called low-price Tesla, and low price means you can probably get into one for a bit over $40,000.
That's not bad.
But they're very, very nice cars.
Hmm. Yeah, I always had the impression the Tesla was a real high-end item.
Well, the Teslas up to the Model 3 were and are very high-end items.
Uh-huh.
You see figures like, $80,000, $100,000 for those cars, the Model S and the Model X.
Mm-hmm. And what about the ones you're talking about, the Volt, the Bolt, the Priuses? I don't even know what they cost nowadays. Do you guys have an idea what those go for retail these days?
The Spark is no longer in production. We bought a used one, and they're quite reasonable. You can get into one for $10,000 or $11,000, depending on mileage and year.
Oh, that's not bad.
Volt, also no longer in production as of early this year, and they were selling in the neighborhood of $30,000 and up to $45,000 if you got everything possible on it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bolt, $35,000 and up to maybe $45,000, right?
Yeah, the MSRP on ours was $38,000. Mm-hmm. And if you were an individual, there was a $7,500 tax credit that was available that would bring that number down considerably.
Right.
Is that still available for
people?
That's
starting to expire.
It's available for the Chevy electric vehicles. Mm. The way that program was designed was it would phase out as sales increased.
Mm-hmm.
So Tesla, which was a early runner in the electric vehicle game, has hit some of those target thresholds, so the tax credits for their vehicles are shrinking. But for the vehicles that are just coming onto the market, the manufacturers that are just bringing vehicles onto the market, those incentives are still available.
Yeah, and do y'all have opinions about, I've heard this rumor that they discontinued a bunch of them, and there's not much really available brand new nowadays, and that there's yet another generation that they're expecting to bring out. Do you have any commentary about
that? There are a lot of electric cars available, a lot of models, makes and models.
New. Oh, okay.
Yes, and they're more like every week, it seems like. They're, not so common on the Oregon coast because, you want to buy an electric car from somebody who can provide maintenance, and the only kind of local maintenance electric cars in our area is the Chevrolet dealer, Coast Auto.
Well, that's not bad.
So that's one reason why we have Chevrolets rather than something else.
Yeah.
But also they're very good cars, and the price is, reasonable compared to some others like Teslas. Let's say that the cost of electric cars is higher, per new car than an equivalent gasoline car. But if you look at life cycle costs, the cost of maintenance and gasoline, life cycle is probably substantially less.
Well, the difference between $9 for a trip to, what was it, Gold Beach and versus two is pretty impressive.
That's a lot. No, but the maintenance too. No oil changes. No, the maintenance schedule on our cars is every 7,500 miles you rotate the tires and check the coolant levels, the fluid levels, and that's it.
Wow, yeah.
And one maybe kind of a myth about electric cars is it's exotic technology and complicated and all that. It's really the opposite. There are not very many moving parts in the electric cars. Electric motor basically has two compared to a gasoline engine, which has 200, I don't know.
Yeah,
what the count is. And so they're you know, simple. You've got a battery, electric motor, or two or more, and some battery conditioning for where you have to heat and cool the battery depending on the conditions that you're driving under. And that's
I'm confused about that. You have to condition them at the beginning or ongoingly, or what does that mean exactly?
Well, batteries like to work within a certain temperature range. Mm-hmm. If it gets too cold, they kind of get weak. If it gets too hot, same thing happens. Mm-hmm. And operating batteries at outside of their normal range of operation can shorten battery life. So I think all modern electric cars have mechanisms to heat and cool the batteries to compensate for that and extend the battery life.
Okay, so conditioning, though, is that a process that you actually do as a consumer?
Well, you don't really pay attention to it generally.
So it happens behind the scenes, you're not that aware?
Yeah, it's all automatic. Oh, okay. The computer controls all that.
Okay, but, yeah. I got that. I want to let our listeners, if they just tuned in, to know that you're listening to KCIWLP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. I know years ago the fear was that these battery packs would give out and then you'd be stuck for a $3,500 repair. But I know with my Prius, it really never did. And there were very few that actually had that problem, according to my service manager when I talked to him about it. What is your experience, or have you done any research about that aspect of things?
Well, we haven't experienced any loss in battery capacity. Mm-hmm. Kind of follow the industry a little bit, and I know of one person who owns an original Volt and bought in 2011, and has over 400,000 miles on it.
Wow.
And still running, but he's starting to have problems with it, you know.
And well, yeah, 400,000 is like way more than I would expect.
Battery degradation was, as I understand, the lesser of the problems of he was having. You know, things are going bad. Mm-hmm. There's one person I'm aware of that got a BOLT Bolt 2 years ago and has 70,000 miles on it, and he was driving operating under worst possible conditions for battery life, which is completely depleting the battery frequently and going to DC fast charge stations to charge the battery and taking
That's
long
bad.
Trips and all sorts of conditions. And he, at 70,000 miles, he estimated that he might have lost between 5% and 8% battery capacity.
So that would just cut down on your range a little bit.
Cut down your range a little bit. Most people operating normal conditions, you rarely discharge the battery all the way. And, you know, at least for, like, Volts and Spark and similar cars, you don't notice any degradation over a period of years.
Hmm. Go ahead.
Manufacturers are offering really good warranties on these batteries, so it shouldn't be a deal breaker if you're considering an electric vehicle. Most manufacturers are warranting their batteries for 100,000 miles, and they are saying that the battery will perform at between 80 or 90% depending on the manufacturer. So it'll hold 80 or 90% of the charge guaranteed after 100,000 miles. And the real life experience of most people that we've interacted with is their batteries are exceeding that 90% threshold at 100,000 miles. So everything degrades over time. Your gasoline engine loses efficiency.
Sure.
But it's not a big concern with batteries. They last and they maintain their ability to hold a charge.
Now, one of the things is that I think people wonder about is you have a charger at home, but also what if you're out and about? What if you get to Crescent City or Gold Beach and you need juice? where do you go? Is it difficult to find charging stations? And you said something about fast charge.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really quite catch that, but it sounded like something you didn't quite approve of for some reason. Can you say something?
Three levels of charging. One is called level one. It's plugging into your standard 120, 110 or 120 outlets and charging the car. And that can take a long time depending on how big the battery is. Our, mm-hmm. our Volt takes something like 11 hours to charge.
That's a lot.
From a normal household outlet. And they call level two charging, which is a 220 or 240 volt. So it's both, because Curry puts out 240 generally, which is higher than a lot of places. And that will cut the charging time by a factor of four maybe or more.
Okay.
And then there's something called DC fast charge, which is not what you'd have at home. It's a mm-hmm. little bit more exotic, but charging stations have those. And
so that's for if you run out of gas somewhere, out of gas, so to speak.
Well, they're quick. Mm-hmm. They'll charge your car pretty quickly. Like the Volt doesn't have DC fast charge. The Spark does, and it'll charge from an empty battery to 80% in 20 minutes.
Wow.
Which is...
And you said one of your cars does that, but the other car does not?
The car doesn't. And the Volt doesn't need it so much because, you know, if you really run out of charge, you got the gasoline engine to run on, so
right.
It's, you know, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
But if you have a pure electric
Belt
car and you're traveling long distances, the availability of DC fast charge stations is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at the apps that tell you where charging stations are now, there are not that many fast charge stations, but they're popping up more and more. So over time, it'll become easier to take long trips.
Oh, I'm sure. So right now, I understand there's something at Freddy's
mm-hmm.
and anywhere else around town.
The Chevy dealer has one.
Chevy dealer has yeah. one.
But Freddy's, they only have a level two charger.
Okay.
No DC fast charge in our area, as far as I know. There's a Tesla charging station down at Crescent City, but that's not available
to
everybody.
And nothing in Gold Beach, huh?
No.
There's a level two charger in Gold Beach at one of the
places. One of the pizza places.
Huh. So if you go for one of these commercial outlets instead of charging at home, is that expensive? What happens there?
More expensive than charging at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have to make a profit and pay for their investment and things
right.
like that. Yeah.
Except that we did charge the Volt at the pizza place one time, and all they required was that we bought a pizza. Wasn't that the whole requirement?
Yeah, you had to be a customer.
Yeah, but, if you're
a customer.
Then they let us. So, you know. Anyway, it was yeah. So there's various ways, but I think other places you do pay, and you can have a card that you can put into them so that you can pay for your charge.
So it would just be quite a reasonable amount.
So. Mm-hmm. Charging at home, the unit that we measure energy in is in kilowatt hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're at your house charging, it's going to cost 9.4 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay.
If you are traveling and using a DC fast charger, those rates vary considerably depending on where the charger's at and the company that's operating mm-hmm. it. But those are between 20 and 30 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay.
So it's
translating that into everyday dollars and cents, a charge at home versus
1 kilowatt
on the
hour,
road.
If that's going to get you 4 miles,
mm-hmm.
9.4 cents at home will get you 4 miles.
Oh, okay.
On the road, that might cost up to 30 cents if you're in a place that has high energy costs and is a popular charging station.
So let's see, am I got this right? For 4 miles, it would cost
9.4 cents, approximately.
So, I don't know, 25 times 250 for
so that's where you get to the 235 for 100 miles. Yep.
Yeah, 235 for 100 miles. Okay.
And so, a point about how much it costs per kilowatt hour at home is that we do get very reasonable electricity here in Coos Curry Electric area. But in some areas, perhaps other states, other places, the electricity would be more expensive, correct?
That's correct. But even in places that have fairly high energy charges, I mean, if you you were to even double these numbers, it still pencils out to a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's going to cost you $5 to drive 100 miles, that's still half the cost of a pretty efficient gasoline vehicle.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's still a good deal. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. All right. So what about other brands? We talked about the Chevy brands, and we've talked about the Tesla. Are there other brands out there that you think are worth talking about, or is it pretty much just those few that are out there now?
Well, it's kind of an exciting time because electric vehicles are popping up all over the place. Currently, it's mainly European manufacturers that are you're seeing them from, and that's driven by some energy policies in Europe, where in a lot of Europe they are having a mandate where they're phasing out internal combustion engines. So if you're going to sell a vehicle in Germany or Norway here in the near future, it has to be an electric vehicle. So that's motivating these European manufacturers. But you're seeing some exciting vehicles. Jaguar has an SUV out currently.
Wow.
Audi has an SUV that's coming out at the end of this year. Volkswagen has three vehicles that are expected to be released over the next 24 months. So they're popping up all over. They tend to be higher end vehicles now, because generally higher end vehicles is where you can recoup your cost of investment for
the R&D
to coming up with this new technology, and then it pretty rapidly trickles down into more friendly priced vehicles.
Right. So that's kind of, I guess I've been trying to figure this out, that they discontinued several different ones this year, but that there's this new wave coming of new ones out there, especially these European ones, I take it.
Well, you see ones like the Volt that got discontinued, and that's not because they aren't good cars. They're actually very good cars, and they serve their intended purpose exceptionally well. But small cars are not big sellers in the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see now that Ford has discontinued manufacturing every passenger vehicle car except for the Mustang, and they're going to only produce SUVs and pickups. And they're doing that because
crazy?
that's what
sedan
sells.
Is going to be a thing of the past.
So
I like a sedan.
Sure.
Anyway.
So SUVs and pickups sell. So manufacturers have realized that they want these EVs or plug-in hybrids to sell,
fill that gap.
They need to make what people buy, which tends to be larger vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I know. I read somewhere that the biggest segment of the automotive industry is pickup trucks, and the biggest selling vehicle of them all is the F-150.
Yep.
Like, and if you look at the street, they're all F something or others, you know.
In response to that, there's a startup company called Rivian that is, hopefully they will get something to market soon. Yeah, these startups are kind of risky. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. But they have money behind them. They've purchased they actually own a manufacturing factory. They bought an old one from Mitsubishi in Iowa, I believe. And they have prototypes of a full-size pickup, four-door pickup, so the double cab that has an EPA range of 400 miles and four electric motors, so one for each wheel, a 16-inch ground clearance for off-roading.
Wow!
I mean, it is a real pickup, not a look-alike pickup. And
what caught my attention was an electric motor for each wheel.
Yes, that's
so you get
mine too.
You get true four-wheel drive. If you are in snow or off-road on a slippery surface, and one wheel starts slipping, it can reduce the power to that wheel and use the wheels that have traction to drive it. So there are
four different battery packs. It's four different engines working
four different
off of
motors.
One common battery pack.
Correct.
I imagine.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
that's really interesting. Wow.
And Ford just invested in Rivian several $100 million. I don't remember the number. I think it's like $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting a lot of traction. The truck is impressive. And, you know, that's, you know, you see all the F-150s around. Mm-hmm. You know, pickups are a big market.
Yeah, they sure are.
That's right. And Tesla is promising to come up with a electric pickup also, but I don't think it's as far along as Rivian, which is actually driving pickups around, sending them to car shows.
So with this new generation coming out, is it because, I mean, did they discontinue the other ones because they thought they could do a better job on this new generation? Or, I mean, it's just still kind of puzzling to me that they would just discontinue a product already out there.
Well, there haven't been that many electric cars that have been discontinued. The Volt and the Spark happen to be two of them,
okay,
which we own. But reasons are, you know, the Volt is a transitional technology. You know, the GM's designs and, you know, started selling the Volt in 2010, late 2010, when there were no charging stations, there were not much of anything.
Right.
So that was a way to get electric cars out to the public in a way that would be acceptable to the average car owner. Mm-hmm. Well, times have changed in those years, and, you know, the compelling reason to have an engine is kind of going away. So General Motors released the BOLT Bolt in 2017. And that's the direction they're going. General Motors has announced that they're going to have 20 fully electric vehicles by 2023.
That's very impressive. You know,
and people in the automotive industry, pretty much the consensus is that electric motor vehicles are the future. And
just going to take over everything.
Internal combustion engines aren't.
What other trends? Oh, go ahead, Linda.
Another really encouraging thing about the electric cars is that they're cleaner, and I really like that myself. That it feels good to drive something that we know isn't really spewing, you know, carbon into the air, and especially here in Coos Kerry Electric, where our electricity is almost all hydroelectric. In fact, Jacob could speak to that a little bit, but it's really encouraging that we can have clean energy and to drive our cars with. And when we're going down the street, we know we're not pouring out emissions to the people who are walking down the street. You know, it's a good feeling. It really is.
And you really don't sacrifice anything for that.
No.
Electric cars are extremely practical. As a matter of fact, they're more pleasant to drive than internal combustion cars. That pretty much everybody's driven electric car will say that.
My Prius, I mean, it wasn't really anything different than driving an ordinary car. I mean, it was definitely a hybrid. It wasn't all electric. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the one thing that happened to me a couple times, again, because it was so quiet, is I would space out, think I had the car turned off, and try to get out of the car. And I had to chase it down the street twice.
Oh, wow.
Chase it down the street.
It just goes to show what kind of an airhead I actually am. But yeah, because, you know, you think you've turned it off, but you can't tell the difference in the sound level because it's always quiet. You get out and it's still going.
I don't think ours will let us out. It complains if you haven't turned it totally off. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Mine
was very early. It was like one of the very first ones they ever built. So.
Yeah.
They've probably, a lot of people have that problem. So they've made it so that you really know if it lets you know this. You haven't done everything, so think about what you need to do here before you get out of the car. Just like it will loudly tell you if you don't have your seatbelt on, the beep is very obvious.
Yeah.
But it will tell you if, you know, you're not ready to get out of this car. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
What other trends are you folks seeing? I can tell at least a couple of you are really on top of this. What else is out there in our future?
Well, you see year-over-year improvements in charging infrastructure. Currently, most of the DC fast chargers that we talked about earlier, it can deliver energy at a rate of 50 to 60 kilowatts. And that's okay, but it's not going to be the answer for people that want to pull over and top off their battery in 15 minutes and get on with their road trip.
Right.
So you're seeing those numbers increase. Currently, there's fast charging infrastructure that like Tesla has that delivers energy at the rate of just over 100 kilowatts. But the technology is emerging that will deliver energy at the rate of 200 to 300 kilowatts.
Okay.
So to put that in kind of some perspective that means something, if you can deliver energy at 300 kilowatts, then you are going to be putting 100 miles of range in a battery in 10 minutes.
Wow. Or long
so.
Enough to sip a cup of coffee.
Yep. So it's as the technology progresses, it makes just pulling over on the side of the road like you would at a gas station, mm-hmm. and filling up your electric vehicle.
Not having to think about it.
Not having to plan lunch and a trip to the mall around it.
Yeah.
It's just a brief stop.
What are the challenges of the industry?
Well, that leads directly into one of the biggest challenges. Mm. So the rate that someone uses power, we measure that in kilowatts. Mm-hmm. So you use power in kilowatts, and we bill in kilowatt hours. So to make those terms make sense, I use the analogy of the speedometer and the odometer in your car. Mm-hmm. The odometer shows how far you've driven. That's kilowatt hours. That's how much energy you've used. The speedometer shows how fast you're driving. That's kilowatts. That's the rate that you're using energy.
Yeah.
And infrastructure that uses a lot of energy really fast. So if you have charge points that use 300 kilowatts, that's a lot of energy. To try to relate that, a residential home at their peak might use 15 kilowatts
wow.
at the peak time during the month when they're using the most energy, when they have their heater going and the hot water heater, 15, maybe 20. So mm-hmm. so these charge points need 300. Now, if this is a charging bay and it has 10 of those, now you're up to 30,000. These numbers get really big really quick.
Yeah.
And the infrastructure to support that is expensive and significant because energy has to be generated when it's used. We don't have a grid storage solution yet where we can generate it and save it for when someone needs to charge their electric vehicle.
Right. So then that can be complicated if it's not being in use, but it has to be able to respond to that demand for such a high amount.
So we have a grid that wasn't built for mm-hmm. charging thousands and thousands of electric vehicles, mm-hmm. while currently, according to DMV records, we have 82 electric vehicles in Curry County.
Is that counting hybrids?
That's counting plug-in hybrids, yep.
Wow.
That's what's registered here. When that number turns to 800 or 5 or 6,000, you know, 82 doesn't have a large impact.
No.
Once we have 5 or 6,000, that's going to require some significant infrastructure upgrades to be able to handle that.
Yeah. And those upgrades, we're talking about dollars, I'm sure. Is it something that's going to strain our Coos Curry infrastructure? I mean, in terms of our budgets and so on, or is it something we're going to be able to build right in?
Well, fortunately, it's something we can see coming. Mm-hmm. We all know electric vehicles are going to be more common.
Yeah.
We can read the writing on the wall there. And it's something that we're planning for. We need to have a rate structure that allows people to charge vehicles, and hopefully will encourage them to charge them at night when power is cheaper for us, and so it would be cheaper
for
them.
Which is a logical thing anyhow.
Right, and it's easy because you come home and you plug them in and they charge
right.
at night anyways, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
And we're working on solutions on how do we do that where we're not passing costs on to people that don't have an electric vehicle yet. We're making mm-hmm. it fair for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there there's some good ideas floating around there. Fortunately, we're not doing this in a vacuum. It's an issue that electric utilities are facing all over the world.
Right, you're so not bending the wheel here.
Right, there's options out there. We just are trying to find the right one that's going to work for our members.
So just to be clear, you're not suggesting that we're going to see rate hikes of a significant amount on account of that, are we?
No. On the contrary, if we handle this well and we were able to, with the support of our members, build rates that make sense for people that have electric vehicles, then it could be a positive thing for Coos Curry and its members and help drive costs down eventually, because we have a lot of fixed costs. We have a lot of wires in the air,
right,
and trucks.
Sure.
And we divvy those up among the kilowatt hours that we sell. Well, we've been selling less kilowatt hours every year for quite a while. Everyone that buys a refrigerator buys one that's more efficient than the one they just replaced. And
right,
everyone that buys a hot water heater buys
so
one that's more efficient.
So we have some unused capacity as
so,
it is.
So we do. We just need to make sure it's used at the right time of day. So increasing those sales and having people buy electricity for their cars instead of gas, mm-hmm, could help keep costs down for our entire membership.
Great to hear. I'm just going to take a break here to say you're listening to KCIWLP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. So you're telling us a little bit about Coos Curry. I imagine there's some other things on the horizon in terms of alternative energy. Could you give us a little bit of an overview of where Coos Curry is, you know, heading and looking forward in terms of the future and in terms of sustainability and all those factors that really are relevant to being concerned about climate change and the development of the community and all those things? What's on the horizon for Coos Curry? Can you summarize that real quick?
Well, briefly, we are really fortunate to be a member-owned electric utility in the Pacific Northwest, because that means we have access to the Bonneville Power Administration hydro system.
Mm-hmm.
That provides us with electricity that's 97% carbon-free. So 97% of the energy we use emits zero carbon. The extra 3% is due to times when the demand for electricity is high and the river flows low, so Bonneville has to go out on the market and purchase some energy to fill that gap, and sometimes that comes from natural gas, most commonly.
A small gap, though.
But 3% is a pretty small gap.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. So as far as carbon, electrical generation being a carbon emitter, we are way ahead of most of the rest of the country. That's a good spot to be.
It is.
But it doesn't mean we're done. Renewables are important. And currently, while the hydro system is a renewable, it's not considered a renewable when it comes to filling mandates for renewables. Those have to be other sources, such as wind and solar, biomass, geothermal, and others. So we have some work to do to meet the requirements for other renewable sources, but we can do that because we do have the hydro system, and that provides a nice base generation source that fills in the gap for solar when the sun's not shining and wind when the wind's not blowing.
A quick question about the electricity for your car. Is it possible at this point to fuel your car at home using solar power? I mean, would that be feasible, or is it just you couldn't produce enough power with solar panels or whatever to actually keep your car charged?
It's possible. It's easier to accomplish if you have on-site storage, like the Tesla Powerwall. If you are using solar to charge batteries that then hold the energy, so it's available for you when you need to charge your car. Otherwise, you are subject to only charging your car when the sun's out. And if we have a foggy day or an overcast day, or it's evening time, that's not going to work.
Right.
So it's all about the storage, really.
So storage is a big deal.
Yeah.
Not just for electric vehicles, but for the electric industry as a whole. Again, as I mentioned earlier, when you turn on a light switch, that electricity has to be generated in real time by a generator somewhere. There's no bucket to put that power in the meantime. So when that changes and we have batteries or other forms of storage that can hold energy at a grid level that we need to power whole communities, that makes intermittent renewables such as wind and solar much more viable, because you can generate the power when the sun's out and then hang on to it until you need it.
So, okay, that is one of those areas that I struggle to understand. In terms of something on the scale of our electric company, are there other at least theoretical models besides just battery storage that can do that storage function for us, or is it we're pretty much going to be looking at enormous batteries?
Well, theoretically, there's all kinds of possibilities out there. Uh-huh. It's debatable how practical any of them are.
I see.
Because they all have, everything has pros and cons. Mm-hmm. A common form of energy storage is pumped hydro. So when you have excess energy, you pump water into a reservoir at the top of a hill, and then when you need it to generate power, you let it run back through a pipe, through a turbine, and generate electricity.
That sounds pretty simple.
So that exists some places, but building a reservoir comes with its own unique set of challenges.
Oh, it sure does.
So there's other options out there. There's thermal storage. In Arizona, there are solar systems that, instead of converting the sun's energy to electrons like a traditional solar panel does, they have large arrays of mirrors that concentrate the heat from the sun onto a tower that's full of salt, and it melts the salt. So they end up with this giant pool of molten salt that stores the heat, and then they use it to create steam later when they need to generate electricity.
Wow.
Oh, that's fascinating. I hadn't really heard of that. Yeah.
One of the things, too, that I'm often confused about is this idea, and I think I heard somewhere that there's a cap on how much electricity a person can put back into the system, and so now I'm really over my head here, so you're going to have to translate this into something that makes sense to you, that the idea of having your own solar and being able to put that back into the system, you need a certain kind of grid that ours isn't capable of doing, and then on top of that, it's not practical because there's some kind of legal cap on the amount of electricity you can do that with. Is that makes sense? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I believe I do.
Okay.
So there's a maximum size for, we call it distributed generation, but when you want to put a little power plant on your house, mm-hmm. If it could be a little micro hydro generator off of a creek or a solar panel, mm-hmm. or a wind turbine. But
right.
if you want to put a little power plant on your house, and you want to tie that into the grid, we have to put a cap on that. And the cap's pretty sizable.
Oh, it's so good sized. Okay, good.
But the idea of distributed generation is to largely offset the usage within the home. Mm-hmm. The goal isn't to have people become electrical producers.
Right.
And we need to have that cap, because if someone had a very large solar array, if you're starting getting up into the hundreds of kW generation, mm-hmm. So it's a kind of grid level generation, mm-hmm. you fall under all kinds of federal and state regulations that are very complex and very expensive to adhere to. And those are necessary in order to maintain grid stability.
Yeah.
Because we can't have someone that's supplying a significant percentage of our electrical needs that suddenly goes offline without us knowing about it.
Ah, right.
That creates a cascading event, and then we end up with power outages. So we need to regulate that size in order mm-hmm. to maintain grid stability.
But what about the average person who might just generate a surplus from time to time? Can they put that back in the grid now, or is there a plan to make that possible down the road?
Oh, absolutely they can.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have some interconnect requirements because we want to make sure that if we have a power outage mm-hmm. and we have linemen working on the lines, mm-hmm. we don't want people putting power back out onto the grid then because we don't want to hurt
yeah.
people
right.
When those lines are supposed to be de-energized. So we have some rules with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the details are on our website at ccec.coop. But yeah, we happily let people feed excess energy onto the grid.
Well, so we're going to come down towards the end of our broadcast here. I love some of these things you're talking about. I imagine there's much more we could talk to you about in terms of Kudkuri programs and projections of the future and all of that stuff. I'd love to have you back and just focus on some of that one day if you would be willing, Jacob.
Oh, that would be exciting.
It would be wonderful. And I find I have one last question, which is anybody who could answer that. When you put one of these charging stations into your home, what's the cost of doing that? Or does that come with the car?
It's charging station is no more than a 240-volt outlet like you have on your dryer or stove or something.
No big deal. And it's not a specialized piece of equipment you have to install.
Well, it's just standard, you know. You call up your electrician if you find one to do work around here right now and say you want a NEMA 1450 outlet in your garage and you're there. You do have to buy a special cable. There's a special standard for charging cars, and that'll run you maybe $300 to $350.
Wow. Well, that's quite doable.
And the outlet probably might be a $300 job to install it. You have to call your electrician to find out.
Mm-hmm. So any other last thoughts? Again, we're just trying to get down to the bottom of the electric cars here. Anybody else got anything you want to mention?
I would encourage anyone that's skeptical, that thinks that they're just a glorified go-kart, to go out and test drive one. It's a hoot, and most people within 5 minutes behind the wheel have completely changed their perception of what kind of vehicles these are.
That's mm-hmm. amazing.
That's true.
I'm going to go do it.
There you go.
Okay. So we've got here in the group, we've got Tom and Linda Bozak. And Jacob, I've spaced on your last name. Will you give it to me again?
Jacob Knudsen.
Thank you, Jacob Knudsen from Kudkuri Electric, for participating with us, talking about electric cars and what's up with the co-op. And thank you all so very much for showing up. This has been Lee Tooley, your host, with Pi White, co-producer and technical support. And thank you all for listening to KCIW.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.